listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. Bruce Cameron, Wayne Fritz. Wayne.
Hey, Bruce, how you doing today?
Doing well, doing well. Another great day down here.
Here we are, October 4th. Okay. Man alive, it's ticking by fast, man.
Ticking by fast. It's still pretty warm out there for October, but
expect
that. Texas.
But I'm telling you what, it's just amazing that, you know, look where we were 18 months ago. Look where we were dang near 2 years ago now. I mean, man, people were locked down. I mean, it was just beginning. What a ride we've all had.
Yes, we have. But you know what? As we've discussed here on the show, we have pivoted and gone with the Zoom meetings and the electronic ways of expressing and communicating and selling and purchasing. And so we have endured. So that's a blessing.
That's what I was going to segue into. It's just with all that, it's amazing how ingenuity takes place. You know, it's like when I remember reading that during the big depression in the 20s and 30s, which, by the way, was kind of interesting what Ryan was talking about on our show last week about 2025. That's what he was talking about, 2025. Back in 1929, when we had that Great Depression and, you know, all the people in the Dust Bowl in California or Oklahoma going west, and during all those different times, and yet there were multimillionaires made.
Yes.
There were millions lost and millions made. It's very interesting because when hard times fall, it's like the old saying, when the tough get going, or when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Mm-hmm. And we laugh at that and we have all these sayings, but boy, there's a lot of truth to that. Because during this pandemic time, not just the medical people, you know, not just the multi-gazillionaires who are making money off of vaccines, but people in business, small business people, the people that drive, that actually drive our economy and drive the American dream. A lot of them have gone beyond success.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting, Bruce. I know I'm just blabbering here, but you talk about the world's greatest coaches. One of the world's greatest coaches is just America itself. You know, when America tells you, just America, just the word America. Now, you know, I know you and I are both proud Americans. We have so many Americans that are. But I was watching this flood of immigration coming up from the southern border. And they're all saying, I want to be in America. I want to be in America because that's where I have an opportunity to do better for me and my family. I mean, what? And we live here. Mm-hmm. We take this for granted. And yet, man alive, everybody in their breath. The only time anybody wanted to leave America is in the Vietnam War when they wanted to go to Canada so they didn't have to get drafted. Right. Otherwise, nobody ever wants to leave America. They want to come to America. And man, and we do. We've got the greatest opportunities, and we've got the greatest minds. And it just makes coaching seem small when you have that. The big coaching is our heritage and our history. It just tells you right what's right. Anyway.
Yeah, no, I think coaching for that individuality, I think this country lends room for you being a success in what you do, on who you are. You know, even not too long ago, I was in Zurich, and while that's a beautiful place, some of the uniformity that you see among the people, and you just see that, you know, the European, you know, it's just a little bit different over there, and you kind of feel it, you know. It's just so here. It's I feel anyway way more individualized, individualistic, and everybody has, like you said, everybody has that opportunity. I believe, or at least the vast majority of people have opportunities in this country that they wouldn't get elsewhere. So yeah, I think that, you know, moving forward, you know, it'll be interesting to see what kinds of things happen moving forward in the coaching arena, not to mention the economic arena, because everybody's talking about, hey, we're pumping trillions of dollars into the economy of non-earned money. There's going to be a recession, and there's going to be possibly a depression, but certainly some sort of recession that's going to have market correction. And then who is that going to affect, and how, you know?
Well, that's the truth. And it just, when I was in my 20s, I had an old guy I looked up to. And he said, Wayne, take your money and buy gold and bury it beside a metal fence post. So he said, because look out. And this was back in the 70s. So you just never, but listen, you know, coaching, when we talk about, that guy was coaching me. But, you know, it brings me that when we had a big Zoom call the other day for our entire global leadership team. Mm-hmm. And then they had asked me to talk about a few things on there about coaching. Mm-hmm. And one thing that is very important in coaching, and boy, I bet you could really speak to this better than I can, but it's not what you can do or what your abilities are as a coach. It's, do they want you back? You know, do they come for one session and go, man, I don't like that person. Or, you know, I don't want, that was nice, but I don't want to do this anymore. Or, you know, the most important, I've always said to people, the most important thing is it's not what we know, but it's, do they want you to come back?
Right.
Because if they want you to come back, you'll have time and opportunity to help them and to guide and direct them. And to have them answer, usually it's them answering their own questions.
Correct. But
if they don't want you back, it's all over. So it's a relationship program.
Let me jump right on in there. Case in point, yeah. I got two flavors here. Flavor number one is just what you said. Had a gentleman call me last night to help coach him and his family through some situations. A gentleman I'd worked with before successfully two times in this guy's life. So here he is calling again for a third time, wanting to engage, and we'll do an engagement letter and get right on that as we resume our coaching with him. So that's case number one of the person who saw value in the services before and is now seeking out again. But my other favorite flavor of this is, I got another coaching engagement from a very large company, worldwide company. And this fellow, doesn't know what's going to hit him, because rather than being fired, he's going to be working with me for 2 months. So he's, you know, I'm getting his program ready. It's an 8-week program. I did the engagement letter, you know, for the initial assessment and thing. And that is that amount of money. Then each subsequent contact is another amount of money. And then the wrap up is another amount of money, which is a little bit less than the initial engagement assessment money. And the thing turns out to be a nice multi-$1,000 contract for 8 weeks, 8, 10, probably 13 hours, something like that. So not bad, right? For for what you're getting. And so this, you know, this, and this guy, you know, we'll see. I think he's gonna love me by the end of it. I don't know. But I do know, you know, he needs to, you know, go along and get along, and it's going to be anger management coaching.
Yeah. It sounds like they're bringing him to your front door, kicking and screaming. Well,
I wanted to go to theirs, brother. This would have taken me to the East Coast. Unfortunately, they didn't have it in their budget to fly me out there for a couple of times. I used to do the 360 evaluation and some other stuff in person. I was doing a little, but this isn't, this is more of a topic focused coaching thing and not so much a full life coaching thing. They just want this, this topic of anger management, executive anger management addressed in a timely manner. So, and so that's another good thing. You know, the first person needs it. Second, it's good for the company because they can put something in this guy's personnel file that says he addressed this issue. Third, it has my kind of wrap-up report, if you will, you know, talking about what all transpired. And so it's kind of a win-win, right? So,
right. So yeah.
You guys have any wayward demonstrators?
Well, no. Not, we, you know, it's, I know what you're talking about. And but you know, about 7 years ago, there would have been somebody, I'll tell you, but.
Oh yeah,
it got dealt with. But you know, on another thing, you know, in coaching, you know, it's like Bruce. A lot of times, people that you coach and I coach or get coached, when you give your background or your credentials, and if someone's introducing you, like when I get introduced. With a lot of experience and all this in the field that I'm in, and da 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 da. But you know, I got to thinking that one thing they fail to say is all the times that I failed.
Oh yeah.
You know, that's something that good. You know, that kind of stuff doesn't sell when people are introducing you. They don't talk about your failures, and yet the people that we coach. One of the reasons they're being coached or they want to be coached is because they're failing somewhere. And and they don't feel, you know, they lose a little bit of self-worth. And yet, that's how you learn.
That's
you
right.
know, those failures, I mean, I wouldn't be worth a diddly squat as a coach if I hadn't failed enough times. And I'm going to reach back again to... our faith, what faith we have individually. And I was listening to a message yesterday. Wait a minute, is today Monday? Yeah, I keep getting my days mixed up. Yesterday, talked about when was the last time you gave yourself grace? You know, even though you might be saved, you might be a good person in your faith. And it talks about, you know, our belief comes and our being saved and our knowing where we're going and knowing what's happening and being so sure of that and have the faith comes through grace and mercy from God. And I know we're not on a ministry here, but we are too. We're always on a ministry, but it talked about, have you given yourself grace since you've become a Christian, for an example. And because we always fail. I don't care where we are. We always make failures. That's part of our growth. That's part of our transformation. So we always want to be able to find help with those if we need them. But we always want to take time and have those conversations with ourselves, with God, and also with probably, if we're coaching, with the coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those failures can go beyond just business failures.
Yes.
Moral failures, behavioral failures, other relationship failures that have direct impact on things. And so, you're right. And being able to learn from those failures, being able to harness, if you will, the experience of those failures and learn from that so you don't make that mistake or that fail again. So, or at least
let me ask you a question. I'm sorry.
All right.
I mean, we're going off in some spider webby places here on this show, but I think this is good for us. And it also helps everyone understand that, you know, in coaching, you're a human being. But Bruce, let me ask you something. I'm finding that in doing over this last year, especially I'm doing all this Zoom call coaching and mentoring, sales training. But a lot of the people when I get recommended to them for coaching, we have our first contact, and then it's usually by the second contact we're having a one, and I set them up 1 hour, and that it'll come out not business. What they'll be talking about, you know, when you say is, it's just like in coaching, you say, well, let me ask you, Bruce, thanks for having me visit with you, and can you tell me what it is you're looking for? You know, I'm telling you, at least 7 out of 10 times, they're going to go personal on you.
Yeah.
And I don't go there too much. You know, I'll go a little bit and listen. Because it's kind of like in my business, you have to listen, but
right.
Then you have to decide as a coach. Now you're different. I'm a certified coach. That's it. And I have, but I have life experience. That's it. But right. Bruce, you're degreed in a lot more stuff that's important. I mean, counseling. Well, but I mean, seriously. So I listen. But I, as a coach, and I'm saying this for coaches,
is
you want to be careful. And if it starts going in a direction, if it's personal, they say, listen, Bruce, I'd like to keep this between us. That's one thing. But if it's something that they're having the challenges of personal, that their actions, what they're doing, behavioral, stuff like that, that's where, as a coach, I'm just saying that as a coach, you need to be careful. And my recommendation would be to have a friend like I have with Bruce, that if that happened or ever would happen, that I could connect them with a person that's professional in that field.
Right.
It's like if they're talking about their arthritis, you don't want to give them a cure for their arthritis. We as a coach are not qualified for that. We need to tell them they need to go see an arthritis doctor.
Correct.
So I think that's part of being a good coach too.
Absolutely, is knowing when to tap out, or like you said, to refer, knowing when to refer. And I've even had to make referrals, not to myself, but just to other practitioners, just because I had already been in too deep as a coach. I didn't want to, you know, switch gears into counselor or whatever. So I referred out to other allied providers. And so, that's a great distinction that you make. And we just have to know our lane and stay in our lane. And I think some coaches make the mistake, or, you know, they want that billable hour, and they'll hang in there longer than they probably should have on a clinical issue or something, you know, something clinical, I guess, you know what I mean? Or certainly outside the scope of the coaching relationship. And so it's kind of hard, you know, for that. But
I think it goes beyond the billing hour. I think it goes to, it's almost, it's a dangerous area to go into. That's what I think.
Sure.
I think it goes when it's trouble, it's when it goes beyond the billing hour.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
or the need for billing. If you need to, you know, and I got to thinking when I was contemplating all that, I got to thinking when I was in my, again, I go back to my 20s, I guess I'm not old enough to forget everything yet. But when I was in my 20s, I I dislocated my right shoulder, and it was pretty bad. And I mean, I couldn't raise my arm up more than this. And so I went, and my doctor said, you'll get it back. You'll get it back. Take a year for that. So I went to my chiropractor, and he was looking at it. He said, Wayne, he said, there's still been something more wrong with that. And they didn't do that. Chiropractors didn't do x-rays back then. But he insisted that I go to a sports guy. Well, it wasn't only, it had been dislocated, but what it, the ultimate thing was it had fractured.
Oof.
And they had to do surgery. Well, listen to this. My chiropractor was not a medical doctor. He was a chiropractor, but he's the one
that said
he stayed in his lane.
At least right.
The medical doctor told me, said, oh, just work that up. I saw something posted the other day, and I reposted it because it was so funny. It was all of us as kids, you know, on a monkey bars. If you've ever played on monkey bars when you were a kid, it's my mother, I died once when I was 5 years old, but my mother told me to just walk it off. So and that's how, you know, we were raised. You know, we did all that kind of stuff. So, but you do want to stay in your lane. It just got to be, it's important. And we're doing, remember why we coach. It's why I coach is because, and the same reason why I was in business, it's like Zig Ziglar always said, you get anything in life you want if we just help enough other people get what they want. You know, so in coaching even, what we're doing as a coach is we're helping people get what they want. That should be our desire.
Yeah.
Is to help people get what they want, whether it's to come, you sometimes come out of an addiction or behavioral challenge or whatever it is, me to get better in their work areas, or personal areas, what they can do within them. A person as me as a coach usually is answering their own questions. I'm just right there to keep asking them until they kind of go, oh,
to that aha moment. That's
yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, sometimes, you know, just depends. People will kind of get into an area, either where that's grief, loss, or even trauma. And I know, you know, back in, gosh, from 2014 to 2018, early 19, I was doing a lot of Me Too cases and sexual coaching some of these executives on appropriate boundaries and stuff like that. I know it's kind of an interesting paradigm there, but I had actually a couple of female clients. And again, these were corporate. And yeah, once they had shared a couple of traumatic things, they're like, whoa, whoa, you know, we got to make that referral to a female.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm tapping out immediately on that. So, just because that's not my lane. And then it just, I knew I worked in a women's prison for 6 years and must have counseled hundreds and hundreds of females, and many of them in women's prison come from a trauma background. And man, now that was different because it was me and two other people for 3,000 women in a prison. So, you know, we got to go ahead and handle that. But certainly on a coaching thing, make that referral. So again, understanding what your lane is and staying in the lane, and that's okay. Clients are going to drift into areas that are problematic for them. And some you may be able to address or help them, coach them through, but some maybe not. You make that referral and that's just fine. That's completely acceptable. You're not admitting defeat or showing inadequacy at all. And again, I'll be, you know, doing this 30 plus years. Shoot, I'll be the first one to refer as soon as I see something, you know, outside the lane. I'm going to address that and refer that out.
Bruce, I wonder on our show if we have any listeners that are thinking about going into coaching or kind of looking into it. Because if they are, I think maybe sometime, and we're just shooting back and forth here, but this is such a great help. You know, I wish I could have watched a program like this or listened to a program like this we always say, I wish I could have done this years ago. But I think that could have helped me doing what I like to do better. I just do. So if we've got anybody out here that is thinking about this, or you're on listening to the program saying, where do I go and how do I get rolling or what's going on? And just those kinds of questions, man, boy, reach out to Bruce. His name is on here every week. Reach out to this program. Send us an email or something.
Yes, send us.
Because this is all, we're all in this together, I think. And if we can help people, gosh, man, just think about it.
So, you know, thanks for saying that. And on every show summary that I have posted, there's either your email or my my websites. It's in the show notes. You can Google us. You can, like I said, we're particularly me. My number's out there all over the place. The 214-431-2032 out there all over the place. And conciergecoach.net, concierge coaches on Instagram and Facebook. So, man, we're out there. And we would love to answer your questions. We might do a Q&A here in a few weeks. Sam's got to stack people up on the link on the StreamYard. But we might be able to have some questions and answers about that. And we've done that. And I've done that before. Once a year, once every 2 years, take calls and answer questions from prospective coaches or people who are interested in getting into the coaching sphere. You know, Wayne, one of the things is that, a lot of people are good at coaching, but they're not good at business. And so they need that extra training and expertise in getting their website, getting their own social media, their paper together, their coaching liability insurance, their website, how and where they meet clients, the length of the sessions and those things, how to do the engagement letters, how to price your services. And so there's as much, if not more, that goes on behind the scenes with your coaching business and practice management as there is doing the direct service of coaching. Now, that's my opinion.
Yep.
I don't know how you feel about that, but I would say that.
Well, it's the same. You know, it's funny that you say that, because in our business, in the sales industry, we talk a lot about, it's so simple. Our business is basics. You know, we have to prospect. We have to bring people into the business. We have to train them. And then we have to learn how to close a sale. So those are the basics. And those are the most important things you have to be good at. However, there's more to the business that I'm not good at.
Right.
It's what you're saying. It's the back office.
Mm-hmm.
The back office is very important. That's the systems, the structures, the accounting, you know, the marketing. And you've got to have those, so you can have places to go do your basic, what you're good at.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You've got, those are just as important. Mm-hmm. Very good.
And the pandemic, and I say this every week, but the pandemic did help in one respect, because I take a lot of electronic payments now. And those electronic payments go right into that business account. And boy, howdy, when it's time to get ready for the tax man and to say, okay, this is what the business account started with on January 1st. And this is what the business account had on New Year's Eve. And we're going to balance, right? We're going to balance the books here. And so having a lot of electronic payments makes that part of a very distasteful part. balancing the reconciling the business account. But people of more means hire people to do their books and won't, but I can actually, my client load is finite. I can go in there and actually do it by hand as if I was a sophomore in college again in intermediate accounting, you know, balancing and reconciling. There's some fun things. You don't want to overcomplicate things or get too OCD. I could have spreadsheets. I could do this. I could do that. And then I would just be swimming in mechanisms and burning a whole lot of time that I don't, that time on my front end, as you would say, right? The counseling and the service providing, it's just so much easier for me. But nonetheless, so.
One thing I just, since I, we're having, this is like, I'm having you, to, we're chatting here today, and it's really, really good for me too, is, you know, one thing that I found, and if to all of our listeners, is this is and can be a very rewarding opportunity. I mean, it's you when you can touch somebody and when you can help them or change their life. And when I say change their life, I mean, give them the confidence, help them realize what their goals are and that they are going that direction, or turn them around and get them going in the correct direction in their business. And give them that confidence. And I think that's one of the things a coach, in my business, that's one of our goals, is to give them that confidence. And I've had some of them that I've been referred to or that have reached out to me, and I've set up a time, and within a week, you know, I'll give them assignments to let me know what's happening in activity. Because remember, what's the most important thing we can do? It's activity. And so just act. Those are, if you look at that and not results, we can control activity in our lives. We can control the activity that we do. We can't control the results, but we do have control over the activity. I'm talking about sales.
Right.
Especially, but you know, I can control the fact that I'm going to go knock on your door.
Yeah.
I can control that. Now, I can't control your response.
Right.
But the most important thing is I'm going to go knock on your door.
Right.
Because if I knock on enough of them now.
Set up enough shows.
That's right. Zig Ziglar always said, he said that if you run a dog around town all day, just let him run around town, and it had an order pad strapped on him, sooner or later somebody will sign that order, because that dog will see a lot of people. It's the same with us in our business. If we see a lot of people, somebody's going to invest in our product. Doesn't matter what the product is, because you just have to see the people.
Yeah. You know, I think for some of the people I've worked with that were mid-career professionals, and, you know, of course, it gave my client more confidence. And I hear what you're saying there. But when I think of the ones that were referred to me from internal affairs or from human resources, it gave their supervisors confidence.
Good point.
You know, you want Matt feeling good about Wayne, you know, you want Ryan feeling good about Wayne, you know, and so, you know, that's an interesting thing. Some of these guys that are mid or late career professionals, if they were to get fired, lose their job, there would be a heck of a lot of mental health calamity to follow. Trust me. I mean, if, you know, I always talk about this FBI agent that I worked with, and he showed up one day after his 57th birthday to work, and they had to escort him out of the federal building in Dallas because, hey, sir, you retired. And he wasn't ready, man. He wasn't ready. Anyway, you know what I mean? And nobody had really coached him or talked to him about what was going on in his life and some major changes that were coming up ahead. And it just really had some other things. I've worked with other cases that, I mean, these are million-dollar-plus-year men and women. And their performance, Wayne, is hanging in the balance. And so they look at other dependent variables, right? I mean, they're looking at, what did they sell? What, and then the people that retain them, right? If I'm retaining my coaching client is a consultant, and if that consultant doesn't make money for that client that he's working with, or she, right? Because as a consultant, the idea is that you're going to make some sort of gain by, you know, in this company, right? So if I'll do an example, I had somebody who worked in essence for Ford Motor Company in in Michigan, right? And that person was on a team that was assigned to Ford to do widgets. I'm just going to protect the innocent here. So we're going to say the word widgets, right? And to help Ford with their widget production and widget sales. And man, and if right, those gains aren't present, guess what? They're not going to retain that consulting or that consulting firm, right? And so, and in some of those, in that widget sphere, it you have to be there, show up, do this. I mean, but also see it through with the numbers. So, so anyway, and that's and I was kind of proud to be part of that process. That's why Ford doesn't make cars hardly anymore. You know, they make trucks, a few SUVs, because they just had to get down to, you know, Ford had to get down to what was selling. There was no error. You know, you couldn't have Ford Focuses and Tempos and you know, Focus, Tempo. What was the other one? Taurus. Fusions. Yeah. You know, they had all these kind of underperforming lines, you know, and I was shocked, you know. Then later on, I wasn't involved in this one, but did you ever notice that Oldsmobile went out of business, but Buick stayed? Like, how the hell did Buick stay? But they did, you know, they did. I mean, they did their game with their engineering and made those vehicles beautiful, you know. And it was kind of the affordable old man's car, you know.
That's right.
Hey, Buick. I bought the Cadillac on a Buick platform out there.
Yeah. Yeah, who would have thought that Buick? Yeah, and the Oldsmobile was the monster car back in our day.
Yeah, it was.
You know, the 442 and
good engines, good product. You know, that pretty interesting lines. It just for whatever reason didn't make it. Anyhow, they didn't for a reason, and I'm sure they called in consultants and coaches and experts, and you know, after a long trial and a lot of analytic data and a lot of other things, they made a decision. Hey, we're going to cut them. Saturn. Remember the Saturn? It looked like that was going to be a brand that was going to go okay. Went away. The Hummer looked like that was a strong GM derivative. Looking like that was going to be blowing and going, but then it went by the wayside due to fuel efficiency and different cultural times. So
yeah, wrong time.
But to be, you know, anyway, to be involved in those businesses decisions as a consultant is kind of fun. But man, you know, but stuff gets real quick when there's millions of dollars on the line and there's an expectation of that continued cash flow to come through there. And so anyway, and a lot of these consultant groups had to be fast. They couldn't travel anymore. They couldn't send teams this COVID. They couldn't fly. They couldn't go on site. So they had to get really productive with their teams. And so one consulting firm they were nameless, I guess. But so they're pretty smart, Wayne. They have. I'm Bruce, and I work for the Acme Consulting team, and so I'm working by day, and I'll go to bed probably about 9 or 10 at night. But then my counterpart, who's my twin brother in India, keeps working, so we're working on my project 24 hours a day. So when I wake up, I get the baton back from my counterpart in India, who is oftentimes way more sharp and better educated, and they're paying them half the salary. Anyway, sorry about that. All right. So I'm just, these are facts. I mean, it doesn't take too much to be sharper than I am. However, you know, long story short, that work was perpetual 24 hours a day. And that was a way that this consulting firm could kind of capitalize on their human capital, human assets, and keep that work going at an affordable price point and be able to make deadlines earlier and sooner and those things. So, and then it became kind of a fight because then the overnight crew wanted to take more part in the day crew. And, So we had to kind of bit ourselves in the tail there, trying to keep the U.S. as well as India happy at the same time. But anyway, some of the rigors of corporate coaching and consulting. So one solution causes two more problems sometimes.
Well, we've had consultants in our company when I was on staff many times, even back when I was executive vice president and president. And then there was a time that they came in and asked us, really, said, we used to have, in our business, we had lots of tableware. We had cookware, china, crystal, flatware. We had it all. As a matter of fact, our company began, 75 years ago. And the beginning of the company, they did a lot, what they called then the single working girl program. Now, if any of our listeners are older or more mature, they would know what I'm talking about, but or they would remember telephone companies. When the telephone companies had operators, the town I grew up in, we had Western Electric was a telephone company. Then it went to Bell. But the telephone company would come out for lunch or after work. I mean, it'd be like a cartoon of all the girls coming out because they were the operators. They were the one. Is this the party with whom I'm speaking? And so a good individual would stand there and hand out cards, and then they would go see him with their mother. One of the qualifications, you were a single girl in high school or something, your mom had to be there with you. And they would show them the products. And back then a girl could invest in this for her hope chest.
Oh my
God. A hope chest was something that sat at the end of the bed.
Yep.
Your bed, and you would put stuff that you wanted when you got married. You call it your hope chest. Matter of fact, it was kind of going out when I came into business, but I always used to say that we would count single working girls on our shows. If they were out of school working full-time and between the ages of 18 and 30, because between the ages of 18 and 30, we said that they could, or I said that they could set this up for their hope chest. I said, if they're older than 30, usually we call it a hopeless chest. No, but, and that was the reaction I got. So, you got to have a little.
Wow.
But this guy, real quick, I know we're going to run out of time, but this consultant one time finally said, he said, well, what do you guys want to sell? What's your core product? And we had to make a decision. And because we were selling so many things. And the core product was the cookware.
Yeah.
And so we got rid of everything. And now we're in over 50 countries, and we're going for the biggest month in the history of the company.
Wow.
Yeah, so there you go.
Because of you.
Well, no, I'm just a little bitty speck, speck on the wall.
I have a grain of sand in this beach, but
but I'm part of it. Yeah, that's a good feeling.
It is. No, man, I mean, what is. Well, that's good, man. I'm glad to see that. And intuitively, I wouldn't have thought that because of the pandemic and the lack of live, if you will, stuff. But the fact that you guys are able to more than pick up the slack with these new technological means is fantastic, And it's just taught us that we just have to learn to deal with stuff like we're doing today. Me and you are sitting in front of a camera and we're being broadcast electronically. So, I think, that is some old dated stuff, man. That you call your airline flight attendant a stewardess. Remember that? It was a stewardess. And
my daughter Heidi asked me the other day, she said, Dad, was I dreaming? Or she said, did we ever fly on an airplane that had a lounge and a piano? And I said, yes, we did. It was way back in the 80s. It was one of the last ones. It was Continental Airlines. We flew from Denver to Hawaii on a 747 that had a lounge and had a piano bar.
Wow.
And I was at the tail end of it, so it was old. But that's how they used to be. Can you... You go sit in the sit at a piano bar and have smoke. Oh, yeah, you'd smoke and have martinis all the way. And just get off, you know, just, I mean, think about it. And boy, those, I remember very well the smoking sections. I couldn't stand them. And I smoked some back then, but I could not stand a smoking section. It was so dry, drier than a popcorn fart. I'm telling you, it was dry.
It was, I got a few minutes left, but I'll say this. I was working with a guy and he was with a, you'll know who the airline is once I say it. So I'm not going to say the airline, but he's like, this airline was founded on skirts and go-go boots. And I mean, he ain't lying.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. I mean, I know.
You see this majority list. It's like, he's right there at single digits. You know what I mean? And man, they were, you know, boy, this guy's a fossil and he's just so out of date and his speech is offensive, you know, to say the word go-go boots and stuff like that. But hey, those are the facts. Like you said, you smoke a cigarette in the piano lounge. Is that a fact? That's a fact. You know what I mean? I'm not being some sort of a discrimination thing when, golly, boy, Pan Am, those old Pan Am flights. And oh my God, now you got me. It used to be a flight deck where you could watch the planes fly away. Remember that? Ooh, that was such a deal. You had enough money to fly on a plane and you see your loved one off and you just sit there on the flight deck and watch that plane fly away. Just mess. Yeah. Woo.
It's funny. I can still today go sit and watch airplanes take off and land. And I live right close to the DFW airport, but it still mesmerizes me. And you used to have to get dressed up. You know, you didn't sit on a plane in shorts. No way. That's just no, or blue jeans. No way. It was a lot of respect for, that was first class. I mean, I don't care if you were in coach, which coach about like business class is now. But you dressed up.
That's right. It's almost like going to church. Bring your Sunday best. It's like Easter.
Christmas. Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Bring your respect toward the, and, you know, and as a federal guy, I always had to wear a suit. They made me on the plane. I was on duty travel. I had to wear up into the, single digit 2000s. We had to wear a suit on the plane. And then I'd take the tie off and get in trouble. And I still look good in the suit, though, but without the tie. But anyway, then it relaxed after 2010. You could. Or you'd book an extra travel day on the front end and take half day per diem and call that your travel before you did your business. Anyhow, enough of that. How are we doing on time? And we got a minute. And
Ross Perot. Ross Perot built his company on guys with short haircuts, black ties, white shirts. That's how he built his company. You had to be that way. Yeah, that's how he coached his guys.
That's it. And the Feds really adopted that. Well, folks, another great show today with Bruce and Wayne here on the Concierge Coaches Show. Just kind of freestyling it a little bit. We may freestyle next week. You never know. We do have some guests coming up, some fighters, and getting them through their fights first and then getting them on the show, and some other guests as well. So come by and see us on iHeartMedia, on Apple Podcasts. Our shows are stored on the LA Talk Radio website and on our Facebook, the Concierge Coaches Show, and Instagram, Concierge Coaches. So, and I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. And Wayne, how can folks reach you?
Right now, Bruce, they can reach me at wayne_515@yahoo.com.
Right then. Well, that's awesome. And we're here for your questions, should you have any. We love to talk about coaching and the art and discipline of coaching, different types of coaching as well. So please don't hesitate to reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you and get your feedback about what you like and what you don't like. So, you know, we'll do our best. All right, everybody. Well, until next week, have a blessed week and a safe week. And we'll see you here next time at the Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Take care, everybody.
listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz only.